Welcome back to the LuchiCast, presented by Yeti, built for the wild. Visit yeti.com to check out the Gather Round gift guide. Whether you're setting up camp with your lifelong fishing buddies, thinking about that annual beach trip, or looking for a gift for your favorite hunter, you're in the right place. I'm Billy Lucci, and I'll be joined this week by Shane Leckler, former roommate, former Aggie All-American, future NFL Hall of Famer, current NFL Top 100 member, and soon to be inducted into the Texas High School Hall of Fame. An Aggie legend will sit down with us to talk all things Aggies, A&M football, A&M softball, Astros, Tom Brady, the list goes on and on. Well, I'll have you know what's special for me right now, because I'm going to send it to Dan and Seth, is the picture that they decided to use of you right now in the On the Phone with Shane Leckler. And it looks to me like your mugshot from prior, you know, from the game program, media guy prior to like your, maybe your freshman year. This is a baby faced Leckler who still had visions of being a Pro Bowl quarterback probably at this time. I mean, they went way back with this deal, dude.
Jeez. Hopefully. Why don't they call people before that?
Hopefully they will do that. So you've had a busy few weeks in addition to the Hall of Fame, which we're all looking forward to. We're going to be out there as well. But, you know, between Super Bowl weekend, I know you were – I saw on social media and you were at JJ's wedding. A, how was the wedding? B, inducted, you know, the honor Super Bowl week. What was that like? First, just tell us a little bit about JJ's wedding and how that was in the Bahamas.
I mean, that thing was that was awesome. You know, they did it up and they did it right, what you expect from him. It was well planned out and thought out. It was, to say it was a party would not do it justice. I mean, we had a great time. There was not a moment where it was like, all right, well, what do we do now? Man, it was from, you know, hanging out on the beach with all his buddies and Cushing and all those guys were there. It was phenomenal. I mean, we were at the Atlantis and then over to the Ocean Club for the wedding. And it was phenomenal. It was a lot of fun. They did it upright. And, for health reasons, I needed to get home after that one.
JJ's got a fun switch that I don't think people quite appreciate. You know, he's so serious about football, but, and then not a week before that, so you were busy because it was for health purposes between going back to back. This is not the typical Leckler back. You're going down to Rockport typically. You're not going back to back Bahamas and Miami. Tell everyone what it was exactly you were there in Miami for. I know most people know it by now, but take us through a little bit of that NFL 100 weekend celebration.
Yeah, you know, I found out about the NFL 100 team a few months before the Super Bowl. And it was one of those things where, you know, you're on that 100 list and then you take a second, take a breath, and you go look at the list. And you're like, dude, there's some real dudes on that thing, man. Yeah. It was like the top of the top. And when we were down there getting ready before pregame of the Super Bowl, we were in the green room all together. And I'm looking around, and it was Roger Staubach, Lawrence Taylor, you know, just like guys like that. And you're sitting there, like Jim Otto, like some of the old school Raiders that were there. You know, Ray Guy was there. You know, Dion, I mean, I can go on and on. Everybody knows the list. But when you're sitting there looking at that list and you're a part of it, and even, you know, most of the guys that I was with, you know, that I talked to were kind of like, man, can you believe we're on this team? I mean, it's the top 100 best football team ever put together, I think. And it was very – that moment in the green room was very, like, surreal. It was kind of like, do I really belong on this list or do I not? Like, and just being with those guys that whole weekend was phenomenal. Man, we had – the NFL did a good job of, you know, we were together quite a bit, the whole group, and, you know, for breakfast or brunch in a meeting. And But the green room before going on the field was unbelievable because no family members were in there, no kids running around, nothing. It was just us.
Just great. And football greatness.
Yeah, just sit there and look around that room, and it's just like, oh, man, this is unbelievable. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
Was there any tell everyone that you told me a hilarious story, the Brett Favre story, during the game or whenever it was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's epic. That's hilarious.
Yeah, so Favre was always a guy that I've always looked up to and wanted to meet. I've got to play against him a couple of times, you know, once with the Texans in Green Bay, and then I played against him in Oakland that game the night that his dad had passed away.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So the whole time I'm sitting there going, man, I want to meet him. I want to meet him. I want to meet him. And and Erin, you know, she was kind of standing next to me. She goes, hey, Brett's in that other room, not other room, but at the end of the suite where there's not a lot of people around. So I was like, oh, perfect. It's perfect timing. So I went over there to meet him. I was like, hey, Brett. And he grabs a Tostino's chip and gets a scoop of guacamole. And
yeah.
He takes it. I mean, a giant scoop of it too.
Normal move though. That's what you'd expect from Brett Favre.
Right. I mean, it's typical. He takes a bite of it, and immediately his face turns red, his eyes are watering, his nose is running. Well, it was wasabi instead of guacamole. So whoever set up the food tray in there totally screwed up. They put the wasabi right by the chip, and they put the guacamole over with all the sushi stuff.
Yeah.
It was an honest mistake, but it was also hilarious at the same time because he takes off running. I'm sitting there. I finally get to meet him this bite, and I'm like, and he takes off running for the bathroom, and he goes in there, and he throws up or whatever he does, and then he comes back. He's like, just for all y'all's information, that is not guacamole. And it was a great icebreaker for me to be able to, you know, it kind of worked into, it was a funny moment. So it wasn't really stressful for me to kind of talk to him. And then right away we started talking hunting and fishing. So that was right up my alley.
I'll bet. And let's just go into that fishing thing because I know you could talk all day. We are the LuchaCast is powered by Yeti here and the fine folks down there in Austin, led by the Cedars brothers, old roommates and Aggies. And you've met Ryan a couple times. Let's talk about your brother, speaking of brothers. So I'm just fascinated right now. The last time I saw Derek was at your Super Bowl party a year ago, and he had just moved out there to Sealy or building the house out there. And we rode around through the mud and found it or went to it, and he was showing me around. He was so excited. Now, next thing I know, Derek and the family have packed up, and they are literally – cruising. Tell me if I'm to say this wrong. They got a boat. Is it a catamaran?
Yeah, catamaran.
And they are sailing around the world over the course of the next year plus, right?
2.5 years. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just amazed by that. That is like my favorite content right now on on Instagram. But I'm always waiting for them to move. I'm like, when they're stationary for like a week or two, I'm like, all right, come on, Derek, get moving around the world. I want to see this.
Yeah.
What brought that up, and what did you think of that? Is there a part of you that's like, man, I wish I could go too, or are you like, I'm cool sitting here and coaching softball?
Now, first of all, I'm cool with sitting here coaching softball. Now, when it gets to a cool place, I'll fly in, visit, and then fly back home.
Yeah.
But so this all started as a kind of a minor conversation about 4 years ago. I remember we were wade fishing down Baffin Bay, and it was a slow day. So we're sitting there talking, and he's like, you know what, man, I think I'm gonna get a sailboat and sail around the world. So I kind of sat there, and maybe I didn't hear him right. So I cast a few more times, like, hey, dude, what'd you just say? And he says it again. I told him, I was like, I thought I didn't hear you right, but now I know I did. Because, first of all, you're talking about buying a sailboat, which we fished all of our lives, all over Matagorda, Rockport, that whole area. And every time a sailboat would come by, my brother would be the first one to make fun of them.
Oh, yeah?
Like, look at that. Why are those guys on that boat? It's not even powered by an engine. Because he's always, you know, we've fished big offshore tournaments.
Yeah,
we fish inshore tournaments, and we're always on a boat that can get it, like, fast. And he's like, he's always making fun of those guys. Like, you can only go where the wind's blowing and all this stuff. And I was like, you're the first one to always make fun of sailboats. Now you want to buy one.
Sounds like a lot of people we know.
Yeah, so he's so we kind of go through the deal, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a fade. Then the next year, the conversation is a little bit more. Then the next year, it's a little bit more. And then this year, I guess it was probably after he moved into Sealy. That was a Super Bowl weekend last year. So about 3 months in, he starts shopping for sailboats, and I'm thinking it's going to fall away, you know, on the wayside, because he was like, I got to sell my house in Mont Belvieu first, and then I'll think about it. Well, typical Derek, he sells the house in Mont Belvieu. I don't even think the check went in the bank yet, and he was already in Maine looking at a sailboat. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? So he buys a sailboat. The crazy thing about this whole thing that has, like, me, my family worried, my mom, of course, worried, mm-hmm. who's actually with him right now in the Bahamas, coming home today. But anyways, my mom and all of us are like, Derek, you never sailed a boat 1 foot. You've never even been on one. Now you're going to buy a 46-foot catamaran that's 24 foot wide, and you're just going to automatically know how to sail. He's like, no, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hire a captain in Maine after I buy this boat, and he's going to teach me how to sail from Maine to Florida. So
goodness,
he'll teach me all I need to know between Maine and Florida. I'm like, all right. So in 8 days, you're going to learn everything you need to learn about the sailboat. He was like, yeah, I can figure it out after that. I mean, he has been a boat captain for 20 years.
Yeah.
He knows the water. He knows all the chart planning and all this stuff. But so he sails the boat all the way from Maine to Florida. And the good thing is they had to go through two pretty good storms. So he actually sailed in bad weather and did all that stuff. Yeah. So now he gets the boat to Fort Lauderdale. And so I'm thinking he's not going to leave until February or March, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
So he calls me one day and he's like, hey, dude, the kids aren't going to school after Christmas. We're pulling the kids and we're going Fort Lauderdale, get on the boat, and we're out of here.
Come on.
No, there's not a chance you're doing that. On January 4th, they untied the boat in Fort Lauderdale, and they were gone.
Okay, so what's the path here? Is it Bahamas and just east underneath, like, Africa and all the way around and then back through the Panama Canal? Which way? Like,
no, they're going to go through the Panama Canal first.
Okay.
So they're going to hang out in the Bahamas until the – it's kind of weird. Like, I didn't know there was such a sailboat cult out there.
Okay.
Like, the last night he sent me a picture. He goes, hey, this is just one picture. They're in the sailboat having dinner, and he goes to the bow of the boat. He takes a picture, and there's like 300 lights in the water. And he goes, Shane, you know those are all sailboats that are doing the same thing we're doing? I didn't know that many people did it. But they do. So that kind of makes me feel a little bit safer, because he's not only – making some cool friendships out there with a bunch of cool people, but it's not like he's doing it by himself either. So that kind of like eases our thought plan a little bit. But so his deal is going to hang out the Bahamas for as long as he can until everybody's like, all right, guys, we got to get whichever way you're going. If you're going to Panama, you need to leave at this time. If you're going the other way,
just
you need to leave
for the
time.
Seasons, I guess.
Yeah. And then I didn't realize on top of this is, for your insurance coverage, you have to be in a certain longitude latitude zone to be covered. And what they really do is the insurance company has already charted all the hurricane and bad weather seasons. So if you get out of that area, you're not covered.
Gotcha.
So they really kind of protect you on their research of when these bad storms happen. So you got to stay in that. So it's kind of crazy. I've kind of learned a lot of sailboating stuff, which I'm
learning quite a bit.
You know, I'm still the other way.
Softball, you've got both girls in softball. You've been coaching it for a while, but I know you guys and Aaron are huge Aggie softball fans, and also being an East Bernard product, we've got one of your own and one of our own, and Kelby Fortenberry working here this spring as an intern. She's pulling double duty. Doing that and then going out to softball every day where Joe Evans' team seems to have righted the ship, no pun intended, after a rough start.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Kelby. Number one from East Bernard, number two, great softball player.
Yeah.
But, you know, they split with Sam Houston last night. I watched a lot of their softball games. I watched almost the entire in California.
Yeah.
You know, because I've been coaching this game for 10 years now, and I try to pick up as much as I can. Granted, my kids are not college-level kids. They're 14 and 12.
Yeah.
But the more you can learn and trying to prepare them for that next step, if they want to take it, I want to have some knowledge. But, yeah, they started off on a rough – they had a rough beginning. I mean, but they do have a very young team. So, yeah. And they lost some talent, you know, with – you know, with Hudak and Hudak leaving and mm-hmm. a few girls leaving town, it's always going to put a hole in your lineup because those girls were expected to be veteran leaders this year, but yeah. They're not there anymore. So now she's got a lot of young girls, but you know, I like the way they're going. I mean, this whole transferring thing has gotten, to me, an outsider looking in, has gotten out of control.
Does it worry you for, cause it's about to be the same thing. And if, we're like one small step away from having the same thing in college football.
Yes, it does worry me because, for one, when I played A&M football, the loyalty to that college was tremendous. Yeah. I mean, I love the camaraderie of our team. And just, for instance, the 98 Big 12 championship team, that team cared way more about Texas A&M than their own last name.
Yeah.
It was all about winning and having fun doing it. And I probably will never ever be on another football team that had that much team camaraderie than that group right there. And the reason we all hung out together, yeah. We all did everything together. We stayed for summer workouts together. Everybody did everything together. You were with us. You did most of the stuff with us the whole time.
And the easy parts.
Yeah, that group. Yeah, the fun part. That group was probably not the most talented in the Big 12, but we damn sure knew how to play together and win. And that's what it is. Team camaraderie and having pride in your university is a huge deal. And that's why I'm nervous about all this stupid transferring stuff. And they're making it so easy for these kids to transfer. So it's kind of one of those things. These kids are still being babied.
Yeah.
If they don't start, they leave.
I'll tell you this, Lex.
Well, then you have the pressure as a coach and organization to start a young kid because you're scared he's going to leave, though you've got a junior or a senior that's probably better than him. That's bad.
When I look at that team, when you said that, I started thinking about it. I go, Datwin probably wouldn't have been on it. Brandon Stewart probably, in today's day and age, if you're a starting quarterback and you lose your job to somebody your age or younger, you leave. That's what you do.
Yep.
Tiki. Eric Bernard, yep. Dante Hall, that's a crowded backfield. I'm not getting the most carries. I'm out. I mean, it was and there were plenty more you could go talk about. Role players, you know, Shea Holder had to come out there in the fourth quarter of that game because maybe Andy Vincent or somebody had been hurt. He's not on your roster. The guys don't hang around anymore. So it is going to be something really interesting that coaches are going to have to deal with. What about A&M football right now? Where are you at with it? The league, it's probably one of the only sports where the football side of it's tougher than the softball side of it. I mean, it's brutal in softball, just like in most sports. But A&M right now, going into 2020, finally returning a large group of seniors, and with the way Jimbo's recruiting and maybe a break in the schedule, do you think this is the type of season – that could set up for some sort of a breakthrough for Fisher in the program? And where are you at right now with the direction of it?
The direction is amazing. I think the recruiting class that he just signed is one of the top that I've seen in A&M in a long time.
Yeah.
Now, as far as a breakthrough season, it's time.
Yeah.
We're due that season that it's going to take okay, so if we win – a large majority of these games in the SEC, your recruiting is only going to be better. So now you've set the standard after a season that was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a good one, but not a great one, but you got a great class out of it.
Yeah.
So now you're going to have to
– And the third class
has to be
the year
your standard
before.
Now.
Yeah.
Yes, and now this has to be your standard to where these classes that we're signing have to be what's par, and then the only way to compete in this SEC, which is an unbelievable conference, is to go from where you're at now and go forward. The only way to go from where you're at now and go forward is you got to win games on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think Jimbo's doing a hell of a job. I really do. I know when he got there what he was left with, and I know from since he's been there to what he has now has been phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think you're nailing it there. I mean, number three class, number six class, you have to keep doing that to stay there. And in order to keep doing that, the wins have to start coming in terms of like the double-digit win seasons.
Yes, yes. And it's kind of like any sport, I think. You know, I follow all sports. You have to win your home games.
Yep.
Especially in the SEC. And if you go on the road in the SEC, I don't care where you go. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
That's just how it – that's the league we signed up for. And, you know, I mean, not to knock some other schools or other deals, it's not like when we were back in the Big 12, we went on the road and we still won and won and won. This is a whole different atmosphere,
yeah.
A whole different breed of players, man. This is some top-notch stuff. I mean, if you look – now we've got the NFL Combine coming up. I have no idea how many players from LSU are probably at the Combine.
I think there's 16.
Alabama. I mean, so
there's literally
all right, so you're already
– LSU and Bama, I read today, and Georgia, three teams A&M played, 20 or 36 players at the Combine between the three teams. An average of a dozen, A&M's got four.
Yeah, so now that you sign these two classes back-to-back, next year and the next year and
yeah.
the next year, you should start catching up to those numbers.
No question.
And if you start winning, then those numbers are going to keep getting better and better. But what I'm saying is A&M is sitting there sending three that you said to the Combine. Well, you're sitting there playing LSU at LSU with 16 guys that are already prepared and ready for the NFL.
Yeah.
Jimbo's got – I mean, it's not going to be easy. It's not – nothing's easy in SEC, but he's building the right foundation. With those two back-to-back recruiting classes, the foundation is being built to have success here in the next 2-3 years.
And with that said, my next quest is to get you and that RV to some SEC road games. I know you're working on that right now on the RV as we speak out in the garage. So let's talk real quick. I'm going to hit you just with a couple quick NFL. I'm going to give you four NFL names, and you give me 30 seconds, a minute on each here.
All right.
I'm just going to tell you the name and – Deshaun Watson. I know everybody asks you about JJ. You guys are boys, but Deshaun. I know when he came in, that was a big reason, Leck, why you were trying to say I want to play long enough because I think this guy can win a Super Bowl. After watching him these last couple seasons, do you still feel that way about Deshaun?
Yes, 100%. That dude's a pro's pro. I know that's a cliche that everybody uses. I've been in the NFL locker room for 18 years. This guy's a real deal. He is one person that you're not out of the game. He is one person that doesn't get flustered. He stays even keel, but he has a winning mentality. Like that organization spins around him. He is the eye of the hurricane. So he is the guy that runs that thing. And when he gets the rest of his guys, if Fuller would have just stayed healthy for the entire season, he's already got Hopkins. He's already got a pretty good tight end. His offensive line got better. They knocked 20 sacks off of it from the year before. He is the guy. And the reason I wanted to come back one more year and play for him is because I thought he had a chance. At that young, I thought he had a chance to win the whole thing.
All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, Tom Brady. Is he for the New England Patriots this season, or is he wearing a different uniform? Maybe your old uniform with the L.A. Raiders.
You know, proud moment. I was drafted above Tom Brady, but
that I did not know.
I was drafted in front of Tom.
I know you were sixth round. You were fifth round, right?
Yeah, I was fifth round. So, anyways, that's beside the point. But I know in John Gruden's heart of heart, he really wished he would have took Tom Brady instead of me. But now they might meet back up again. It is hard to see Tom not in a New England uniform. It is also, I know for a fact, that John Gruden loves veteran quarterbacks, like ones that are real veteran quarterbacks. I mean, he did it with – he beat us with Johnson whenever he was in Tampa.
Yeah,
Gannon. He had Rich Gannon as a league MVP in 2002, John's last year. He loves veteran quarterbacks. And is there a better veteran quarterback on the market? No, not a chance. And so I think John's going to push for that. But I see it's – I don't see Tom leaving New England just because he's Tom Brady and he's New England, you know?
Yeah, no,
But if he does, I could see him going there. I don't see him going to Indy because I think Phillip Rivers is probably going to walk in there and take that with his old, you know, one of his older coaches is there. And I don't see Tom going down and playing for Bruce Arians in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
It's either one or two. I don't see him going to Miami because they're really blowing that deal up to rebuild it. He's either going to Oakland or staying there.
And another one they mentioned, and I'm hoping that's not the case because we've got our boy who had a revival there this year because you have a head coach like Dan Campbell that knew how to properly maximize his talent within a system, and that was Ryan Tannehill. Tennessee, it's been mentioned. And I wanted to ask you about Vrabel because I know y'all were buddies when he played in Houston and coached. But, when he was coaching there in Houston anyway. What do you think of the job he did at Tennessee? And what is it about him, Shane, that made him so successful in such a short time as a head coach?
The smartest coach I've ever been around.
Really?
Plain and simple. Wow. He knows every part of the game, offense, defense, special teams, because he played every bit of it. He caught umpteen passes for touchdowns. Mm-hmm. He's a very good defensive player. He had to play special teams when he first got in the league. So he knows all three aspects. He knows the importance of all three. And that guy studies film like no other. And the stuff that he's looking at when he's film studies is not the obvious. I mean, he already knows the obvious. He's already down to the fine, minute deals. Now, Ryan Tannehill did a hell of a job for them this year, believe me. And with Tom Brady being mentioned in that, that's an easy rumor. I think that's an easy rumor for everybody because of the friendship that those two have, Vrabel and Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have dinner. Yes, they're going to hang out. I mean, you do that with your friends.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he would go down there and do that. Now, would it be a good fit for Tom? Yes, especially with that run game. Now, Tom's play action stuff that he runs every third play makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, so would it be a good fit for him? Yes. But I think it's also a very easy rumor for everybody to start because of their friendship.
All right. And then finally, Bill O'Brien, just because it came out in the last couple of days that he is giving up play calling duties. Just real quickly, knowing O'Brien like you know him, haven't played for the Texans for that long, you were there when he got there. Did that surprise you when you heard that news?
Yes, it did. Yeah. And I'll 100% believe it when I see it.
Yeah, right. it's hard for him to give that up.
If he has a headset on the sideline, I'm not believing it. You know, I mean,
override.
That's a hard deal for him to give up. You know, if he's not calling the plays, believe me, they're going through him.
Yeah.
And so if he does do that, if he totally gives this thing up, then, I mean, I love Bill to death. I like him as a friend. You know, we still talk, but if he does do that, all excuses are off the table.
Yeah.
Because he's tried it his way. Now he's going to give it to Kelly and he's going to try it that way. So now, you know, all the heat that he takes for clock management and uses the timeouts and all that stuff. Now, if that's the case, then all those excuses or whatever you want to, however you want to say it, they're off the table. It's get it done or who knows.
Final question or final opinion I want out of you. All this stuff, and I know you're not a big social media guy, so you're not seeing it quite like everybody else, but I also know you were at the World Series. You've been to a lot of Astros games over the years when they were bad, when they're good, when they're great. What's your take on just everything that's gone on with the sign stealing, the punishment, the reaction around the league? What's your mindset here? Is it just are you disappointed at all, or are you just going, you know what, they did what everybody else in baseball does. They just did it better. Or if you know, you're in the NFL. There's you know, the Spygate and stuff like that. So what were your thoughts on it when you heard it, and where are you at right now? Just go beat the hell out of everybody, or what?
Yeah, at first I was disappointed in it. Mm-hmm. At first, to be honest with you, everybody kind of caught everybody off guard, like a little bit shocked, you know. And I'm a huge Astros fan. I mean, that's my team, and that's they will always be my team. My thing on the whole deal was, okay, the punishment's out. Your general manager's gone. Your head coach is gone. The players did exactly what the MLB wanted them to do. They went in there. They told the truth and nothing but the truth, and they shouldn't be punished. If they were going to be punished, they were going to not tell the truth, and you're still not going to fix it. So
yeah.
My deal is everybody in MLB is doing this at some stage. I mean, it's part of the game. It's been around for years. They're always going to sign second base. They're always going to – you know, it's just the Astros probably took it a little far, but just kind of like Reddick said, I guess this morning or last night, I don't know. I saw it on a ticker. Like, okay, guys, we took our punishment. Now, how about let's not answer this question every time we come in the locker room, and let's move on and play ball. Well, I love the fact they scored 11 runs in the game Altuve finally started, where they started playing some of their players.
Yeah.
They beat, who was it, Milwaukee? Somebody 11-1.
Yep.
So that was guaranteed the cleanest game that they've played. I bet you if there was a runner on second base, he didn't even look towards home plate.
Yeah.
And they score 11. So.
That lineup, still, you know, that lineup, dude. I don't care lineup, what they say.
You still got to pitch to them. You still got to pitch to them, and they're as deep as they're going to get, and they might even get better. You know, if some of these young guys start stepping up and taking reign, then you got to look out, man, because granted, they whatever they did with the sign stealing stuff, they still won the World Series, and they still went deep, 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 deep all the way to the World Series again. Whenever they put this punishment out, those players don't go away. So my deal is I love it. If you're going to be the villain and beat the crap out of everybody, and let's see how it falls at the end.
See, that's what I think. I think they should embrace the villain. Just like the Oakland Raiders did, just like LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh did, just like the bad boy Detroit Pistons did. Embrace the villain and go win and piss off the world. Hey, by the way, I don't consider me and you quite as hot-headed as some of our buddies we hung around with throughout college, and definitely some of the guys you probably played with in the pros. How many times if you're Bregman or Correa or Springer, any of those guys, how many hit by pitches will it take for you to go screw the unwritten rules and screw the code? I'm charging the mound. I mean, they've already been getting hit like crazy.
I know, like Altuve or somebody got hit in the back yesterday. Altuve got hit in the first game in the foot, which whatever. I like how Dusty Baker handled that deal because he got asked right away. Altuve got hit in the foot, and Dusty was like, that ain't shit that's going to happen, you know, so whatever. So that goes away. But I hope that it goes back to old school baseball.
Yeah.
To where you get hit by a pitch, okay, that's fine. Then your batter still got a bat, and, hey, pitcher, it's your turn to get our back. Now, let's not charge them out and have a brawl, but let's go back the old way, a hit for a hit.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I mean, how many times did that happen back when Ryan and all those guys were throwing and one of your three or four hole or five hole hitter get hit by a pitch. Well, guess what? Your three or four or five hole is about to get hit too.
All right. Well,
and let's just keep it that way, the old school baseball.
I agree with you. Leck, hey, I appreciate you taking time out, and that's what we'll do. We'll go hit an Astros game early, see if we can see a little bench clearing brawl at Minute Maid. But before we do, Hall of Fame induction for you, right? About a week or so before opening day. So looking forward to it. Congratulations. I know a lot of Aggies are going to be excited to listen to this. Appreciate you helping out.
All right.
All right, man.
Take care. I'll see you up there.
All right. That was Shane Leckler, eventual Hall of Famer, not just in Texas high school, but also NFL. They better have that gold jacket ready and waiting. This is Billy Lucci. You're listening to the Lucci Cast, powered by Yeti. Thanks, Giggum, and we'll do it again next week.